It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. And so
hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. On the road, but sharing a lot of information today. The latest on health and healing, always from peer-reviewed literature published in important journals and presented from major institutions, meaning the information we share may seem radical compared to what the average person absorbs and uses, but it's actually orthodox. That's the irony of it. Then we're going to have some short commentaries today. I have some commentaries from, for example, "The Experiment in Freedom is Failing," John Whitehead. Very important. John's a powerful thinker. Also, "The Monster in the Mirror, the U.S. Network of Military Bases," by Noor Fernandez from Global Research. Also, "A Return to Debtors' Prisons," Jeff Sessions, "The War on the Poor," by Sophie Tesfaye from Ceylon. "The Coming Climate Famine Anarchy," Dr. Glenn Berry from Eco Internet. 1 in 10 young adults have been homeless in the last 12 months. Wow. From Mariah Balengit from the Washington Post. "Libya, up to 1 million enslaved migrants, victims of Europe's complicity. Toward Freedom," by Bahir Kamal. And let's not mention that Libya is Hillary Clinton's signature piece. Also today, I will be doing a short commentary that I'll ask you to call in on. It'll be our talkback question. Right now, we are engaged in an imbalancing act of trying to make it seem as if everything said about anyone must be true, and therefore the person is condemned. It doesn't matter, not just with Me Too, but what is lacking in this whole scenario? Not that there should not be due process, there must be. If someone's been accused, they should have an opportunity to defend themselves. If they're found guilty, so be it. Then the judgment issued by the population or the courts should be adequate and show that a wrong has been committed. But what about the people who have been accused where there has been no proof other than just a claim? That starts with the idea that everybody making a claim must be believed, that nobody lies, that every single man and woman in the United States tells the truth and would never fabricate anything, ever. Really? Well, I have a few thoughts on that. And then we have some audio files today that we're going to be sharing, depending upon time. One is, I haven't been able to get to it this week, but I will today, "The Biggest Misconceptions Concerning the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict." And we'll be having that discussion. It's about 7 minutes long, but it's very insightful, from Abby Martin. Then, "Can Millennials Change a Light Bulb?" Of course they can. No, they can't. And then also from Jordan Peterson, one of the most provocative thinkers that I have ever heard. And I can agree or disagree with different points, but on this one, I absolutely feel you should hear it. It's called "What Women Don't Understand About Men." And boy, does he nail it. It's only 6 minutes long, but it can really open our mind. Just like the woman yesterday open her mind about. She was a very popular feminist for a long time, award-winning documentarian, and then she made a mistake. She wanted to meet the enemy, the misogynist man. Any man standing up for men's rights must be a misogynist, a woman hater. Then she listened to what they were saying, and then she looked at the transcripts, and then she realized the men were not the enemy. And it was a reckoning for her. So she produced her film, and she was immediately attacked by other feminists. What were they afraid of? One of their own, one who sat at the inner circle, now was herself a victim. So you see, we learn from these things. But we start out every show with health and healing. And this comes from the University of Texas, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Biotechnology. And quite simply, it's about depression and anxiety are very high in graduate students. That's correct. Graduate students, meaning those who go on for more than 4 years, are more than 600% more likely to experience depression and anxiety as compared to the general population. And that's according to the individuals in this social media and direct mail campaign. And the survey included clinical validated scales of anxiety and depression. And 9 of 10 respondents were PhD students. So 90% PhD students and 10% master's students and a very, very high degree of anxiety. So why? That it doesn't tell us. So I'm going to ask you this. Why do you believe that 90% of the graduate students going for their PhD suffer from either anxiety or depression? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And throughout the show, I'll be taking your responses. Now, I know we have a lot of PhDs who listen to this program and master's degrees. We have a very highly educated audience. What's your thoughts? From the University of Connecticut, elderberry, black elderberry, elder, E-L-D-E-R, berry, B-E-R-Y, can improve obesity inflammation. And that's important because that helps lessen your vulnerability to metabolic disturbances like, well, for example, inflammation and insulin resistance and diabetes. So, quote, overall, black elderberry extract appeared to attenuate systemic inflammation and insulin resistance that occurs with diet-induced obesity. So, if you're diabetic or if you're overweight, you're suffering from inflammation completely. So, a teaspoon of black elderberry concentrate. It's also called Sambucus, S-A-M-B-U-C-U-S, Nigra, N-I-G-R-A, or better known as black elderberry. You can get it as a concentrate. And by the way, it's one of the best things in the world for the flu or for a cold. It doesn't take a lot, 100 to 200 milligrams, but that's way too little in my opinion. I believe a teaspoon, then you're up around 1,000 milligrams. I'm always interested in what will slow down or, wherever possible, reverse any part of the aging process in our bodies. Emory University has come up with just one more piece of the puzzle. It's alpha, A-L-P-H-A, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid. Why do I spell so many words all the time? Because not that people are illiterate, but we have a lot of people listening from Sweden and Finland and Norway and Russia. All over the world, people are listening to this program. And if English is not their first language, then they may have trouble with certain words. So I just want to make sure they know how to spell the word if they want to do more research on it. In any case, let me just give you a little primer here. In human cells, as I've mentioned many times, the shortening of telomeres, telo, T-E-L-O, MERS, M-E-R-E-S, that's the protective caps at the end of chromosomes, are both a sign of aging and contribute to it. So scientists at Emory University School of Medicine have found that the dietary supplement alpha-lipoic acid can stimulate telomerase. Now, that's the enzyme that lengthens telomeres, with positive effects, and especially for atherosclerosis. Now, this discovery highlights a potential avenue for treating chronic disease. Quote from the study, alpha-lipoic acid has an essential role in mitochondria, that's your energy production, the energy-generating elements of the cells. It is widely available and has been called a natural antioxidant. Yet, alpha-lipoic acid's effects in human clinical studies have been mixed bag. So when they studied it here, it had a substantial positive effects, especially for your arteries. So one more piece. What are the other pieces? Resveratrol, NAD, and L-carnosine, grapeseed extract. Those also help with lengthening the telomeres. From Minneapolis Veterans Affairs Healthcare Center, prescription opiates, that's the painkillers, fail rigorous new test for chronic pain. Ah, a year-long study, quote, offers rigorous new evidence against using prescription opiates for chronic pain. In patients with stubborn backaches or hip or knee arthritis, opiates worked no better than over-the-counter drugs or other non-opiates at reducing problems with walking and sleep. So, opiates can kill you and do. I do not recommend anyone take Vicodin or oxycodone or phenytoin patches because they're extremely potent opiates. And if you want something for pain, cat's claw, cayenne pepper, white willow bark, quercetin, B-complex, and this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And last year, we had more Americans die of opiate deaths in 1 year than all of American casualties in the Vietnam War. And yet, they're not restricted. Also, from the Nationwide Children's Hospital, published in the Journal of Nutrition, an omega-3 fatty acid can help protect preterm children from autism. This is a big issue. The current issue, the one out right now, the Journal of Nutrition, published the findings of researchers from the Nationwide Children's Hospital of a potential protective effect of omega fatty acids against the development of autism spectrum disorder. And that was very good, because now nurses, and we have a lot of nurses listening, you should, if you work in the wards, pediatric wards, or if you see children who are preterm, understand there's a good article on the omega-3, especially the DHA fraction and the GLA fraction. Not a lot, generally 80 milligrams can help them. And also from the China Medical University, they have researched sulforaphane. And sulforaphane, which comes from garlic and Brussels sprouts, asparagus, broccoli, it ameliorates neurobehavioral deficits, meaning it protects your brain from amyloid beta deposits, the fat deposits that cause inflammation and dementia and Alzheimer's. So eat your broccoli, your Brussels sprouts, asparagus, cauliflower, dandelion, kale, watercress, arugula, radishes, mustard family, all good. And garlic and onions, both good. They also contain sulfur. From the Swinburne University as well as Deakin University, a single dose of a multiple vitamin and mineral and herbal supplement can reduce stress in healthy older women. And these are universities in Australia. And this is published in the peer-reviewed journal Age. So for those of you taking your multiple vitamin, and I know many of you are, and this was a simple low-potency vitamin, imagine those taking higher potency with coenzyme Q10 and the essential brain nutrients, you're doing yourself a lot of good. This study shows that. And finally, some of you are taking the cheap calcium, calcium carbonate. Not good. Take calcium citrate. According to the University of North Carolina, as well as Dartmouth College, a certain type of calcium supplements with or without vitamin D could heighten the risk of developing colorectal cancers. So, and that's your carbonate. That's the cheap form of calcium. So don't take the cheap form. Take the good calcium. All right? It's more beneficial to you. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Let's say hello to Mark from Garden City, New York. Hi, Mark. You're live on the air.
Hi, Gary. Long-time listener, first-time caller. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to comment on your insight about the heightened anxiety of master's and doctoral candidates that you're seeing these days.
Please do.
I have my PhD. I earned my PhD in history in 2002. I'm a high school teacher and adjunct professor of history and political science at a local institution. And I just believe that it's a combination of probably three dynamics, that the rigor of obtaining the degree is a bit of an academic hazing process, whether that's for the better or the worse, it is what it is. I think there's a much greater degree of social, economic, political, environmental awareness within this demographic. In other words, we're more attuned to some of the major problems that plague our society right now, thus creating the anxiety. And lastly, as I've heard you comment so correctly many times before, the job market. The job market for people with advanced graduate degrees is not what it used to be in the past.
All three very good insights, Mark. Thank you very much. By the way, Mark, how many people did you have on your doctoral committee?
I had five readers from my institution and one outside reader, so a grand total of six.
Okay. Good for you. Thank you.
Have a great day, Gary.
Thank you. I'll hold my thoughts until near the end of the show on this. So anyone else would like to share their thoughts on why there's such a very high level of anxiety and depression now in graduate students, those seeking their PhDs or masters, give us a call at 888-874-4888. I'll be taking your answers throughout the call, and we appreciate Mark's 3 points. All three were, I think, very accurate and succinct, and we need to hear that. Before we go to Elizabeth, who has her questions, and she's standing by, I'll be taking more of your calls. Listen to this comment by Dr. Jordan Peterson. If you don't know who Peterson is, he is controversial. Some people like him, some people don't. He is extremely frank, but also he's extremely intelligent. I mean, this guy, I've seen him in at least 50 debates. I spent a whole weekend watching to see what he was about. And he has a way in his own insight to tell us things that are self-evident in many cases, but no one's voiced them to us. He does. You can agree or disagree, and you can call in to tell whether you agree or disagree on what he is saying. And that's what we're listening, just one point. We're going to have a lot of points from a lot of different people, some very controversial, and so that you can have the benefit of seeing if what they're sharing makes a difference or not. Now we're going to listen to a few minutes of Professor Jordan Peterson talk about what women, he says, don't understand about men.
Use the image of female perfection to motivate themselves. And that's exactly right. That's precisely what they do. You see that in the Tom Sawyer story. So Tom Sawyer is about 12 years old, and he's still hanging around with his friends like Huck Finn. And this girl moves across the street, Becky, and she comes out and he's struck by her for the first time in his life. Something's changed. And the first thing he does is hop up on a picket fence and show off and balance in front of her. And he's saying, well, look at me, look at me. He's like the male bower bird building something beautiful so the female will approve of it. And it's motivation. You know, and that's something that I think modern women don't really understand about men. They don't understand that, at least to the degree that males are uncorrupted and not bitter because of being rejected, they're doing everything they can to kneel before the eternal image of the feminine and try to make themselves worthy. That's the chivalry story, right? That's what you should encourage in your partner. So out of chaos emerges this first form. It's the feminine form. It's partly the form that represents novelty as such. So, and on one hand, it's promise, and the other hand, it's threat. You wouldn't believe, and I don't know, because I don't know, I don't understand the situation with women as well as I understand the situation with men, obviously, being a man. But I don't know if women have any idea how paralyzing they are to especially young men. very large number of my clinical clients, but also young men I've talked to in general, are absolutely terrified of women because they're terrified of being rejected. And the terror exists in precise proportion to their attraction to the woman, which is a horrible paradoxical situation to be in. It's often why men make such fools of themselves in front of women that they're attracted to. It's because, first of all, they don't see the woman that they're attracted to, because what the hell do they know about her? They don't see her as an individual. They see her as the manifestation of a judgmental ideal. And then it's only in establishing the relationship with the actual woman that they can start differentiating between the judgmental ideal and the actual individual woman. And that also requires a sacrifice. And the sacrifice is, you never can have an ideal woman. So to have a relationship with any woman, you have to sacrifice the relationship with the ideal woman. And you have to see the individual woman and separate her from the ideal. And that's the same thing that happens to the hero in Sleeping Beauty, right? He sees the evil queen who actually turns into the dragon of chaos. And it's not until he can defeat her that he can establish a relationship with the actual princess. And that's exactly the case. I had one of my clients who ran this men's group, which was quite interesting. One of the things they had the initiates do, which was very intelligent, was to go out and ask 50 women in one day for their phone numbers. Why? Politely, properly, you know. It was a game, but it wasn't a stupid game. And the idea was, get over your fear of rejection. And how do you do that? By encountering it continually and continually and continually, so that you're no longer paralyzed by this. The degree to which the terrible part of the world manifests itself in your life is proportionate to how insufficient you are. And we don't know the full extent of that. If you got your act together completely, maybe all the suffering would disappear from your life. Or at least maybe all the unbearable suffering. And maybe all the suffering or the unbearable suffering from the lives of people around you too. And you already know that because there are people that you'll go to in a crisis that you can rely on and you know they'll help you. And you wonder what the world would be like if you were like that and everyone else was like that too. We'd have a lot fewer crises. And the ones that we do have would be a lot more manageable. And so when people say, well, why is the world so rife with suffering? One answer to that is because we're not yet what we could be. And at least that's an answer that we have some control over, right? You're not going to negotiate directly with Mother Nature, but you might be able to put yourself together a little bit and see if that works. At least it's under your control. Well, here's the decomposition of the fundamental archetype. The dragon of chaos differentiates, on the one hand, into the feminine. That's the unknown. And the feminine differentiates further into the negative feminine and the positive feminine. The negative feminine is the reason for witch hunts. It's the reason for, there's a whole group online called Men Going Their Own Way, MGTOW. That's a very interesting group to go study. There's lots of them. I don't know how many of them there are, and most of them are older. Many of them are men who've been through a particularly horrifying divorce for one reason or another, and they've had enough of women. So they tell the young men that they're teaching, never have a permanent relationship. Never share your territory with a woman. Never share your possessions. Make sure you never live together, and don't stay with one long enough to enter a common law relationship, because you will be stripped of everything that you have. The female has been manifested in their life only as the negative archetype, and they've got that confused with all women. And that's partly, you know, you got to ask yourself, if you know the mythological stories, maybe if you made the right sacrifices, you wouldn't have so much trouble with women. It's a good question to ask yourself first. And I would also say, you know, if you're a woman who has trouble with men, or you're a man who has trouble with women, it's not the women and it's not the men. It's you. Because the women are telling you what's wrong with you, and the men are telling you what's wrong with you. And if you don't listen, then it's you. It's either you or all men. Well, that's easy. It's all men. Well, that's certainly how it's played out in the world right now. It's like, no. It's not all men. You can be sure. By definition. And it's not all women, that's for sure. I don't want to have anything to do with women. It's like, you're a pathetic weasel. That's the same statement.
Go back into your own life and ask, were there times where you were afraid to approach a man or a woman because you were afraid of rejection? Were there times where you felt you just couldn't be yourself and whatever that authentic self was, because you might be judged or rejected for your thoughts, your fantasies, your fetishes, your desires, your creativity, your insights? You edited yourself because of fear that somehow that perfect image in the other person would come back at you at your own imperfections. So it's not men. And I've said this so many times, it's not men and women who are at war with each other. It is the artificial architectural constructs by those in power. And we never look up to those who control both men and women and play us against each other. Men and women are not and should not be at war with each other. Rather, we should be looking at what defines a harmonizing quality between men and women. What can we share that shows that we are human? And then you feel good when you're around men or women who let you be who you are. I remember once I was had a group of friends. We would meet every, generally Wednesday night, and we would have dinner, and then we'd go to a play or a movie, and it was just wonderful. And I had a guy come up to me once, and I just stepped out of a vegetarian restaurant. We were about to get cabs to go down to Broadway. This was way uptown. And he said, do you ever talk about anything serious? I said, what are you talking about? He said, I eat in here every Wednesday night. I'm sitting right behind you all. And I noticed, I recognized Dr. Feldman and Dr. Robbins and all these other people. These are MD, PhDs, very successful people, a couple famous people, Peter Max. I never hear you ever talk about anything serious. You're making fun of each other all the time. I'm disappointed. And I said, well, you're disappointed at what? The fact that we're human beings sharing the joy of our own self-deprecating humor with each other? We didn't come here to share what happened today with patients or our latest books or articles or investigations. We leave all that at the door. We're just human beings sharing the joy being around other people who don't have to be entertained. So you thought this was a lecture? It's not a lecture. And just imagine what that means when people are enamored by the illusion. Well, I've had a lot of very famous people in my life, and when you get one-on-one with them, they're just down to earth. But that means you have to sacrifice something. You have to sacrifice your ego, your image, your that artificial sense of self-esteem that you're only a value if someone else values you. Now think of what you will do for that. Think of all the men and women who went to the Oscars, where the emphasis was on how much is their jewelry, who designed their dresses or suits, what's the value of their latest movie, instead of who they are as a person. You see, I've counseled thousands of these famous people, from members of the royal family to famous celebrities, Nobel Prize. I've counseled them all. Sitting across from me without makeup, without a stylist, without a publicist, without a lawyer, without a manager, without an agent, just them, without a posse, you see who they are. And more often than not, they're very vulnerable. So they surround themselves with people in the direct degree of their celebrity status to show that they're not vulnerable. But they are. And therefore, they keep in a very, very narrowly defined life. It's very scripted. It's very choreographed. They one of their publicists lets all the paparazzi know where they're going to go that night, and then they act surprised and stunned and insulted that you should be here to photograph me in my private time. No, they're afraid once you become addicted, then the media becomes your opiate, and you don't give it up. It's just a game, just like the game of Jennifer Lawrence is in her new movie, the Red Sparrow. She plays this Russian agent who is a killer. Every kind of weapon imaginable she uses. But then she's against guns, and they should be banned. But then at the Oscars, there were 500 armed security people, and that didn't include the private security people that all these people have around them at all times. So which is it? You're against guns, except the guns protect you and the guns you use to corrupt minds of younger people that think, isn't that cool? The hypocrisy is palpable. Where is the sacrifice there that Mr. Peterson was talking about? Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now let's go over and say hello to Elizabeth, who's got your letters and your interest, questions. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. We thought this was an interesting one. It's from a lady called Elaine, who's a writer. She has had some success and then long periods without work and had to take a position as an adjunct professor, for example. Her question's at the end here, but she says, looking over your career, you've been consistently successful, financially supporting yourself and all your projects, and yet many people are finding it hard to have one successful project. She's at a loss to figure out how she can do what she does, her articles and books, and support herself, because she'll do one good article, which will pay the bills for about 3 months or so, but won't sustain her for longer, and she has friends that are writers who have the same problem. She would bet there were millions of people in the same position, and, for example, she's got two friends who both at one time in their career had very good success, and then it ended. But they had built up a lifestyle they couldn't support. One ended up selling insurance, and the other became a maitre d'. So her question is, someday, could you do a show on how self-employed creative people can get to work on their craft without having to become so insecure about finances, especially if they have children and frequently have to compromise and take jobs they don't like but that they need and or are passed up by the latest, newest in a very competitive industry?
All right, well, there's several parts to this. Are you familiar with the Nobel Prize-winning author Aung San Suu Kyi?
Burmese leader.
Yeah, she's the head of the Burmese parliament now. She's taken a complete detour. She's not protecting many of the citizens from Buddhist extremists. And anyhow, but before she turned to the dark side of her being, she said something that has stuck in my mind. It is not power that corrupts, but fear. The fear of losing power corrupts those who wield it, and the fear of the scourge of power corrupts those who are subject to it. Let's break that down. Many people want to be successful because it gives them a sense of power. Whether you are a celebrity or you are a politician, someone who has established themselves to be deferred to, that gives you a differentiation over other people who may have the same background educationally or culturally or ethnicity-wise, but you're standing out. Someone's paying attention to you. So your book, someone's paying attention to. Or your song, or your sculpture, or your movie, whatever it may be. The trouble is, we take success seriously. That is a fatal error in judgment. We should never take success seriously. We should never look at the success as enabling us to have power or authority. We should only look at the successes we have in life, our momentary gifts that are meant to be shared with everyone who wants to share that moment with us. Because without the people that you're sharing the gift, you wouldn't have had the gift. So when someone like this woman had some success at some point in her life or her friend's life, she mentioned, they immediately began to look at how that success will empower them to increase their standard of living, as if a higher standard of living enables a higher quality of life. A higher quality of life will provide them with greater sense of security, completeness, and happiness. None of that is true. As a result, they're always chasing this illusionary, etherical, golden ring of completeness. So one book, one movie, one artistic expression breeds a whole magnitude of intensity. Now you have that success. You exploit it to its maximum. You indebt yourself. You live beyond your means. And then it occurs to you, I better do something else or I can't afford my lifestyle. I don't want to give up what I bought. So now anxiety comes in because you're afraid of losing what you had worked so hard to gain. Then when you cannot support it and you find that the next deal isn't like the last deal, maybe no one wants to publish your books anymore. Maybe the agent doesn't call you to take a film anymore. Then you become depressed because you have lost something that's essential to all people who value other people's impressions of them, and that is relevance. You no longer are as relevant to the public or to your group as you were. Yesterday, I had a person, a TED talk on the show, a leading feminist, highly respected, a multi-award-winning documentarian and author, and she decided to listen to what men wanted and how the world was treating men, not just famous men, just everyday men. And she saw that she had been extremely limited in her understanding of men. She only knew what her dogma and the radical feminist talking points allowed her to know. She had been so fully indoctrinated, she wouldn't even allow someone to say something without judging them. This was a wake-up call. She met the enemy that she thought would be the males, and it wasn't. It was her conditioned mind. So she did her film, and she was immediately attacked. Now imagine what she's going to go through now. All of those very lucrative lecture venues of getting big checks, talking to feminist groups, that door's closed. Being able to get new book contracts, that door's closed. Being able to get new film contracts, that door probably will be closed. She's going to have to learn a whole new skill of survival. But what if she's built up a standard of living that requires her to continue to have an income flow? Then she's going to become anxious, and when she sees it slipping through her fingers, when the phone doesn't ring, when there's no new openings and new financing, she'll go into depression. That's what it means, and that's why in my own career, seeing this early on, when I had a best-selling book, I didn't move out of this one-room apartment over at 307 East 89th Street between Weston and Riverside Drive, where I was with my daughter. Tiny little room, half kitchen, little tiny toilet. But it was $68 a month, and when I didn't have an income, that was what I could afford. So when I had an income, I simply saved. I didn't need anything more. We didn't have a television set. I read the classics every day to my daughter. Took her to the park, took her to the museum, and all of her friends loved coming too because it was the fun place. Well, when my friends got angry with me because why wasn't I moving up? Why wasn't I going around the corner to Weston Avenue, around the other corner to Riverside Drive? I said, I don't need it. Yeah, but, you know, you could get an apartment with views of the park. Why do I need a view of the park when I can go to the park every day and enjoy it? They didn't understand that. They thought it was odd. And so, in time, generally over the next 3 years, all of my writer friends, seven of them, no longer could get books published. The publishing world was changing radically. And they all ended up losing everything they had. And I didn't have that problem. You see, I've learned something. I saw what happens when people allow other people to control their future. And then I saw what happens when you control your own future. I've learned to control my own future, have other businesses, so I can do what I want to do without ever having to prove to anybody that I'm a viable human being. That's all the time we have for that. We're going to take a break. We're going to go right into now, millennials, can they change a light bulb? Please listen, everyone.
To tell you right now, you may not believe this survey that I'm about to tell you about, but here it goes. A recent survey suggests 6 out of 10 millennials cannot change a light bulb. If you were born between 1982 and 2004, you are a millennial. Obviously, I'm not in that age group. I know how to change a light bulb. But I have the survey to show you. It came from marketing researchers, one poll, and it was done on behalf of Moen, the faucet maker. They wanted to know what basic domestic tasks millennials can and can't do. One poll came up with their results by asking 2,000 millennials. Take a listen to a landlord who experienced firsthand the light bulb predicament with her millennial tenants.
So I have a loft downtown that I'm renting out. There's 3 tenants right now. There's 3 roommates there. I think all under the age of 26. I think 26 was the oldest one. Yeah, millennials. Well, so what happened was is the 2 years of the first lease was up, and so I was about to sign a new lease with these 3 people. So I went down there to re-sign the lease with them, and we were gonna do a walkthrough with the new tenants and make sure, you know, everything was good and things, you know, were repaired and, you know, what have you. So I turned on the kitchen light, which would be the main one. I mean, I lived there for years, so I know exactly where it is. So I go turn on, and I'm like, none of the lights turn on. And there was one of the tenants was there, this one girl. And I told her, I said, oh my gosh, you know, the lights aren't coming on in the kitchen. You know, something happened. She goes, oh, I think they've all burnt out. And I'm just like, okay. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. We were going to call you, but I don't know. We just didn't really want to bother you. And I thought, well, that's nice of you. But then I was thinking to myself, why didn't they just put in a light bulb? I couldn't have cooked with that light. I don't even think I could do the dishes with that light. I mean, you could get light bulbs at the grocery store. They have a whole row. So then the next day when I went to work, most of my team at work are younger and they rent and all this. So I just asked them, I said, hey, what do you do when like a light bulb goes out? And they said, they were like, well, I don't know. It's just, we could call the landlords, but it's kind of a pain. But there was no talk of changing the light bulb. So it just kind of, it like sort of blew my mind. Yeah. I was very surprised. I know. How many millennials does it take to change a light bulb, right?
Scary.
I mean, I know how to change a light bulb.
Yeah.
Nobody questioned you.
She got guilty. Again, right. I don't really buy into this survey, but it's something that you could talk about. After all, you can YouTube just about everything
right.
You want to do.
I learned how to fix a dishwasher that way.
I mean. Yeah.
And change a light bulb.
I fixed my garbage disposal.
Using YouTube.
Get a little Allen wrench up under, Spin it around. It clears out all the debris.
How did you learn how to change a light bulb?
That was basic.
Once
again, I'm not in the millennial group. Now, going back to the survey, it basically found that millennials that they surveyed lacked the confidence in when it comes to do-it-yourself projects.
They just weren't quite
sure. But changing a light bulb, I don't know if that's much of a project. I mean, you could probably do it blindfolded, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've changed it.
All right. Yeah. Lacking the confidence. Well, there's where you can call your mom, say, Mom, my light bulb's out, and she'll run right over if she's a millennial mother, and she'll change the light bulb while you sit at the computer, and then she'll give you an award. You'll get a trophy for whatever you want. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. We're going to take on some serious issues in just a moment, but I want to offer you all a special. We got something back in inventory, Power Berry Blast. I use Power Berry Blast every day. Why? Because I know the importance of its ingredients. I know the science, the functional food science. You could Google blueberries. It's in there. Number one ingredient, raspberries, beets, black currants, cranberries, goji berries, acai berries, bilberries, grape seed extract, aronia berries, cherries, elderberries, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, camus, noni, pineapple, guava, banana, quercetin, stevia. Yeah, it's vegan, it's non-GMO, it's gluten-free. It's big can, 500 grams. That's on special, along with stress relief stuff. I thought about what you can do if you can't always change the circumstances in your life. Many people are stressed. They can't just quit a job that's stressing them in the moment. They may not have a plan B. They may not have savings. They may not be able to get out of a relationship that is stressing them in this moment. They may not be able to move out of a place that's stressing them. So what do you do? Well, of course, ideally, you should be mindful of the stress, so don't personalize everything. But most people won't take that advice. So the reality is, and I found this from my own family, my mother, father, brothers, aunts and uncles, they never listened to me, they never took my advice, but I loved them in spite of it. And so after all the effort I made, making meals for them and buying them food, I even called from New York down to West Virginia, where there's one health food store, and had a buddy of mine from high school go over and buy healthy foods and take it over to my mom's. And each week when he would take stuff over, he'd say, are you sure you want me to do this? Because the stuff I took is still there. What do you mean? It wasn't used. Was it taken out of the bag? Yeah, it was taken out of the bag, but it wasn't used. So there is a frustration. I have felt it. I can't get people to change, even to do the best that they should for themselves. What I do is I try to create something that's reasonable that can help be their health insurance for the parts that they're not doing. It's not the best, it's not ideal, but it's the best I can do. So I created stress stuff. It's curcumin, 5-hydroxytryptophan, vitamin C, green tea extract with L-theanine, magnolia bark, chamomile, xanthine, lutein, inulin, malic acid, beets, Luhan, orange crystals, GABA, inositol, L-tyrosine, zinc, melatonin, psyllium, Nutrifusion, spinach, broccoli, carrots, beets, tomatoes, shiitake mushrooms, apples, cranberries, cherries, oranges, blueberries, and strawberries. It is vegan. It is a lot of good stuff. And you take this in the morning and let it work all day long, right into the night. Now, they're both together. They would cost you $210. They're on sale for $135. And you get them right out. We'll send them out tomorrow. So it's a de-stress and rejuvenate package. Call this number. We have some wonderful salespeople, including Sandy and Giovanni and Diane and Mila and Bill, all standing by. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for two great specials. I want to go to a few issues that I mentioned at the beginning of the program and just give you the headlines and tell you why we should be paying attention to these and we're not. This is called Libya, up to 1 million enslaved migrants, victims of Europe's complicity. And this is from Towards Freedom. Quote, European governments are knowingly complicit in the torture and abuse of tens of thousands of refugees and migrants detained by Libyan immigration authorities in appalling conditions in Libya. Amnesty International charged in the wake of global outrage over the sale of migrants in Libya. And it goes on to talk about how many of them are there, trapped in Libya? 1 million. 1 million. And they're being sold at open auctions, sold as slaves. So here is a question for those of you who thought that there was a woman, Hillary Clinton, who was for women. Over half of those million people who are now slaves in Libya are women. And you are directly responsible for the genocide in Libya, in Syria, in Honduras, in Ukraine. Yep. And we're not doing a thing about it, nor is the media talking about it with anyone. This is also an important story, and this is really a sad story, but we must hear it. And this is from the Washington Post, Mariah Ballingit. Quote, hemmed in by low wages, pricey rental markets, and family instability, more young people are crashing on couches or friends or acquaintances, sleeping in cars or turning to the streets, a new study found. Researchers with Chaplain Hall, a youth policy center at the University of Chicago, surveyed 26,000 young people and their families across the country to gauge how many of them had been homeless during some period over the previous 12 months. The results were alarming. 1 in 10 people ages 18 to 25 had experienced homelessness. For adolescents, the number is 1 in 30. They concluded that nearly 3.5 million young adults have been homeless within the last year. 3.5 million homeless? And yet that's not on anyone's talking points. That's not being discussed. We seem to have walked away, turned our backs on that. Yet Russians interfering with the election, that is all the time. And you wonder why people are turning away from the corporate left and right, because they are shameless and they are humanistically illiterate and spiritually devoid of context in any of their discussions. And this is from Nora Fernandez of Global Research, The Monster in the Mirror, the U.S. Network of Military Bases. And it goes, I won't quote it, it just goes into talk about how we have almost 1,000 bases costing us $170 billion a year and how we're not changing the world because of it. We're not making it safer because these bases are there. But we are exploiting the whole construct of war is good. Making money off war is better, and letting the world believe that we're prepared for war is best. These are the neocons. These are the people who need us to constantly be living in fear. And then this, finally, this is from A Return to Debtors' Prisons, Jeff Sessions' War on the Poor by Sophia Tesfaye Solon. And it says that it goes on to talk about how a simple quote of Victorian England's inequitable nature, made famous by Charles Dickens, debtors' prisons were banned in the United States in 1833. The Supreme Court has affirmed the unconstitutionality of jailing those too poor to pay debts on three different occasions in the last century, finding that the 14th Amendment prohibits incarceration for non-payment of exorbitant court-imposed fines or fees without an assessment of a person's ability to pay and alternatives for those who cannot. Quote, punishing a person for his poverty is illegal, the court said, yet in recent years the modern-day equivalent of debtors' prisons have returned as cities have grown to rely upon a punishing regime of fines and fees imposed on their own residents as a major stream of revenue. Routine traffic tickets or even overdue student loan payments can set off a cycle of debt that also includes the suspension of a driver's license or professional license, and in some cases, jail time. A suspended driver's license makes it nearly impossible to get to work. When a person cannot pay fines, courts add on more fines on top of the original. If those fees aren't paid, a jail sentence is imposed. Incarceration is also often meted out to low-income defendants facing misdemeanor charges who cannot afford to pay bond ahead of a court date. It should come as little surprise at the policing tactics that have been enacted to generate revenue through this debtor's system disproportionately impacts people of color. So here we have all these people who are too poor to pay a fine being put into debtor's prisons, where now they're expected to pay a lot more. It makes no sense, and also it's unconstitutional, and yet we're doing it, and this specific attorney general is on it. That is unfortunate. Finally today, I want to just share a moment about two people I knew, Dr. Michael Ellner, one of the best hypnotherapists, psychoanalysts, that we've had the privilege of our meeting. And he passed a couple weeks ago. He had lymphoma. The irony of it is that he never called me. I've known him for 40 years. I allowed him to use my office, the Tri-State Healing Center, for 10 years, where he conducted weekly sessions of his HEAL group. Michael was responsible for helping save the lives of thousands of individuals with AIDS and other diseases by giving them the support, the insight, the encouragement, and the protocols that made a difference. He was a unique and wonderful and inspiring human being. He will be missed. The second person is Minette Loudon. If you ever came by our office at 83rd and Broadway, in that beautiful old building, three stories, we had the second and third floor, upstairs you would have met Minette. She came to work in 2000, and in fact, I just got a call from one of the people she hired, and she said, "I'm so sad, Minette passed." She hired me, this person said, and I said, "Yes." She hired a lot of people. She helped run my company, and especially when I was doing so many films, I had to bring in three different frontline producers and three different editors. We were working on three films for about 5 years simultaneously. So if you watched Autism Made in the USA, she was a senior producer. The Food Move Body Connection, a producer. Vaccine Nation, a senior producer. Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own, an associate producer. Mind Power, a producer. Wake Up and Get Healthy, a producer. A Friendly Fire, Exposing Gulf War Syndrome, associate producer. Prescription for Disaster, associate producer. I'm Not Finished Yet, a supervising producer. The Drugging of Our Children, supervising producer. Enhancing Self-Esteem, the same. Changing Your Life, the same. Fatal Fallout, the same. How to Manifest a Beautiful Life, Embracing Passion, and Supercharging Your Immune System. You're talking about a dozen films, some of the most popular and important ones, and a producer is the person who puts it together. I would give them my script, direct it, and go out and do the interviews, but then you have to get all the different people lined up. You have to get schedules, and it has to be very well choreographed. That is the patience that she had, unique insight she had, and she would sit in the editing room at night and watch the day's clips, what are called dailies, to see what we filmed. And then she would call me and say, redo this, I'd like that. She was a wonderful human being. She had the best sense of humor imaginable, and she will be missed. Minette Loudon, wonderful person. Dr. Michael Ellner, also the same. They went too young. She was only 57. He was only, I think, 68. And I'm going to end. They were both strong spiritual believers. This music is for you.
Let me hear the worshipers!
Every praise,
every praise,
every praise,
every praise,
God. Come on, say every praise.